As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
Welcome to the Andy Staples Show. It's a Friday show, best day of the week. Ari Wasserman is here. We've got lines, we've got totals, we've got to figure out what the shocker is going to be, because it feels like this is the week the shocker usually comes each year, that, you know, the week before rivalry week. 2015, I believe, we had the ultimate shocker in Columbus when Michigan State went in there and beat Ohio State, and they forgot that Ezekiel Elliott was on the team in the second half. That's one of the potential shockers. We promise you, if you listen to Tuesday night's show, Ari and I promise you we're gonna reveal the games we believe might be the shocker, because there's got to be one. So, Ari, let's get right into
that. Well, there's one thing that you're forgetting, Andy.
What's that?
It's not just totals, and it's not just spreads. There's also give-up meter. We're going to try to predict whether or not teams have given up. There's two individual teams, I think, that are on the list that you sent me of just like, forget the total, forget the spread. Does this team have any sort of fight in it, or is it a completely given up on their coach?
Oh, I think I know which teams you're talking about. I think one of them lives near me, and another one is a team that you've recently turned your back on. So that's
very apt observations, right? On your part.
I had not thought about that, but you're absolutely right. And as I look at the lines for both of those games, I'm like, okay, this could get interesting. So, but let's start with the shockers, because I do feel like this is always, now the SEC has sort of changed its schedule, so it's not all SEC teams playing the FCS opponent before they play their rival. They realized that was a problem, so they split that up. So now half of them do that last week and half of them do it this week, and you've still got the ACC teams doing it in some cases, but it feels like there's a little more meat on this bone. But even still, people go into this week and be like, oh, there's nothing going on, this is gonna stink, and then something just blows your mind. So let's start out in Columbus, because I will say the most mind-blowing result of the last 10 years, and I realized that Michigan State team was good and that Michigan State team won the Big Ten, but that Ohio State team was probably the most talented team in the country when that happened. Michigan State is an 18.5-point underdog in Columbus. Could that happen again? Is that possible?
Peyton Thorne has to get injured, right? Because the backup quarterback has to play to.
Oh, yeah. And the kicker has to do the windmill.
Yeah.
That's the only way.
Yeah, that's I don't remember what the spread was in 2015, but that was the craziest game I think I've ever covered. And, you know, that team, I think, was a little bit better than this current Michigan State team. You know, this Michigan State team is punching above its weight, I think, and is achieving things a lot quicker or even bigger than anybody would have imagined. But I think there's a difference between outdoing your initial expectations coming into the year and being a legitimate national championship contender the way that other Michigan State team was in 15, even though they were much worse from a talent standpoint than Ohio State team was. That was a legitimate, you know, top 10 team at the beginning of the year that kind of, you know, played its way through.
Was a 13-point dog in that game, by the way.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, this is similar. And I will say, you know, in my time covering Ohio State, there was no bigger thorn in Ohio State's side than Michigan State. You know, I know Penn State has given Ohio State issues, and I've given James Franklin a lot of credit for the way that he's prepared his teams in those games. But Michigan State historically cost Ohio State a shot at the national championship in 13 and 15. So, you know, I don't know exactly what to expect in this one. You know, I'm a little bit alarmed by Michigan State's pass defense. I think it's one of the worst in the country, and I think that's a very bad combination with this team that they're playing this week.
Wait, so that's a problem if you're playing the team with the best receiving core in the country?
That's
a negative.
You know, but at the same time, too, it's like I've spent a lot of time looking at these games saying, well, this is going to be a blowout, and, you know, I've been wrong, and I'm very curious and kind of hopeful that Michigan State will give us a game on Saturday, because that'll be really, really cool. And, you know, they seem to be a team that doesn't give up when they're down, which I think is also crucial. So if you're in a 10-point game in the third quarter, I don't think you can close the book on this Michigan State team, which is also a pretty good trade for them.
I have a hard time already predicting this as the shocker. I don't have as hard a time saying, hey, if you feel like you think Michigan State's going to cover, go for yours. Because I have a hard time predicting a Michigan State win outright. But if you feel confident that they can cover, and I mean, you go back to that Michigan game when they were down and out, that it just kept on coming. Like, and I feel like Mel Tucker, although his sample size is pretty small, has been able to get his teams up for big games. You know, go back to the 1 year at Colorado, they played Nebraska in a big game that was kind of a rekindling of a rivalry, an old conference rivalry game. And they just came and played out of their shoes in that game. Go back to the Michigan game and the Northwestern game last year when Michigan State was not very good, and they won those two. They're the only two games they won, and it felt like they got up for those. They're going to get up for this. Ohio State, they're going to be up for it, obviously, because Michigan State's a good team, but Michigan is still next week. So it's that is one of the harder things going, by the way, is getting up for both of those teams when both those teams are good. Week after week.
You know, last week when the Purdue spread was what it was, you know, everybody was saying to themselves, oh my God, how could a top 25 team that's upset two top five opponents this year get so many points? And I think a lot of people lost money betting on Purdue last week. And I think if you're outside looking in on this, you know, you might say, holy crap, that's 19.5. Michigan State's the number 6 team in the country. You know, they've played teams tough. They came back from a deficit and beat Michigan. That's a lot of points. But, like, to me, this game kind of has, like, 44-20 written all over it. Like, I don't know that I would take the points in this game.
I see. I feel like if you're confident in Michigan State, take those points. It's almost
it's one of those games where we're going to know in the first quarter whether you're right or wrong. So that's the good news.
I know that's it, because it could be just ugly. And you saw that last week with Ohio State and Purdue, where they just stepped on the gas and it was over. So I am not comfortable picking that as the shocker. Let's stay.
Well,
in
just
the
what
Big
is
Ten.
Your shocker? What is your shocker? Do you know what you're going to pick?
Yet.
Oh, because I'm like eager. I'll tell you. I'll tell you right now.
I have one that I have my eye on.
Okay, so, all right, we'll go down the list naturally, and when it becomes the time,
it's time. Here's another one that I thought about for a second and then dismissed, because one of the complaints we have about one of the coaches in this game actually suggests that there's no chance it can be the shocker. So that's Michigan, 14.5-point favorite at Maryland. And you think, okay, Maryland is, on the right day, can be pretty good, but what has our complaint always been about Jim Harbaugh? They beat the teams they're supposed to beat. They never beat the teams they're not supposed to beat. It feels like he's maybe turning that around. They beat Wisconsin as an underdog this year. But they're going to beat the team they're supposed to beat. I'm throwing that out.
I'm with you. I don't think that there's any shot. And the first time Mike Locksley beats a team in the top 15, I think will be the first. So, you know, unless one of the Texas games – Texas was ranked pretty high in the beginning of the year. So I don't know that off the top of my head, but Mike Locksley hasn't really done a very good job of showing up for big games. And when I looked at this, it didn't even occur to me that this could be one of them. I would lay the points here, I think.
But here's another big one. This is one, I'm not including this in the shocker category because I wouldn't be shocked. So Cincinnati is a 10.5-point favorite against visiting SMU. The total 64.5 in this game. If you've watched Cincinnati the last 4 weeks, would you be shocked even in the slightest if SMU won this game?
No, not at all. I think SMU is an auto bet here. You know, we do a pickers pool on The Athletic every week. Me, Dan Santa Marita, and Chris Vanini, and Jason Sterrett, and we all picked SMU here. So maybe this is kind of one of those spots where
it's a tricky one where they show the ESPN thing with all the SMU logos, and Cincy beats them by 40. Yeah,
because I think Cincinnati is much better, and SMU has a really good offense and a experienced quarterback. But you know, there are times too in the past where SMU has shown up to big games and not really gotten out of the tunnel. So you know, to me, I think SMU. This is the thing, Andy. I don't care what level of football you play, what conference you play in, or how much better you are than your peers. It is very, very hard to go through an entire regular season without losing at least once. And maybe Cincinnati got those losses, quote unquote losses or close losses, out of their system, especially when they escaped an overtime situation potentially with Tulane a few weeks ago, or Tulsa. Sorry. You know, that might be the case. And you also have to take into account, too, that Cincinnati has no chance of making the playoff at all, in my opinion, unless they are sexy on the way to the final rankings. So, you know, that might be too, a part of it, too. But I think SMU is a pretty good football team.
You know what the sexiest thing in the world is, Ari?
Beating good teams?
A zero on the right. A zero on the right of your record is the sexiest thing you can have. They got to have that.
Yeah, well, I think that that is the sexiest thing that you can have. But I also think that when you're in Cincinnati's position, it's not enough. So, and a committee has already proven that, I think. So, you know, beating SMU handily and covering the spread, I think, would be a very impressive win for them, and, you know, might open some eyes a little bit. But Cincinnati is certainly, you know, in a spot where they can use some help to get in if they're going to be the first group of five team to make it.
And obviously, if SMU wins, I think it recalibrates what we talk about with the college football playoff standings. You know, Notre Dame's got Georgia Tech this weekend. I don't think Notre Dame's losing again. They got Georgia Tech and Stanford left to go. So they're probably not losing again. I still think it's hard to put an 11-1 Notre Dame in over an 11-1 Cincinnati if that's the case. But we will begin having that debate in earnest if SMU wins this game.
We'll be right back after these words.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
And now, two pigeons bemoaning the fact you can stream DirecTV satellite-free.
Hey, Frank, a little birdie told me you don't need a satellite dish to get DirecTV.
What's little birdie?
Was it Jimmy the Sparrow?
It's a figure of speech. Point is, you can stream DirecTV over the internet now.
Oh, sure. Next you're going to tell me those big birds are made of metal and filled with people, right?
You mean airplanes?
Stream DirecTV without a satellite dish. Call 1-800-DIRECTV. Terms or restrictions apply.
There's another game with serious playoff implications that I don't think would be a shocker at all if the team high in the playoff rankings lost, and that is Oregon at Utah. Oregon, I believe, is Oregon's a three-point favorite in this game.
It can't be a shocker if the team is a dog. Oregon is a dog.
Oregon's the underdog. That's right. I'm reading this wrong. Oregon's a three-point dog in this game. Yes. Sorry. Of course, it's not a shocker. What is one of the mottos of this show? Rankings don't matter. Vegas matters.
Yes. So, you should rename the show Vegas Matters.
Well, it's funny because I wrote it down correctly in our notes, Oregon +3. And I looked at it and I'm like, wait, did I type that wrong? No, they're favored by three. No, they're not. You're right. They're an underdog in this game. Now, you also know how I feel about Oregon this season and really the past couple seasons. When it's a big game, they show up. This is the biggest game left on the schedule, probably till the next time they play Utah. So I bet they show up. Now the question is, can they win if they show up even?
I think there's some question to that. And I think the natural inclination for a lot of people is going to be take Oregon. But I think ever since they lost to Stanford the entire country has kind of been sitting back and waiting for it to happen again, you know, and maybe there's some expectation from the general audience that they might lose again. You said a month ago that you don't believe that they will, and they haven't yet. So I think, you know, you're kind of married to the taking the points scenario here,
oh,
right?
Oh, I am. I'm taking Oregon in this game. I'm happy to take Oregon in this game because, again, they're going to show up. Also, Utah giving up 29 to Arizona makes me feel a little bit better about Oregon's ability to score in this game. And also, you know, Oregon's second half against Washington State was quite dominant. So if they could ever put four quarters together like that, there's nobody in the Pac-12 that can touch them.
Okay, so you think that even if Oregon shows up, they're automatically going to win?
No, if they, I don't if think they it's show up. But I think there's a better than 75% chance they win if they are big game Oregon. If they are,
yeah, because like, Utah could probably beat shown up Oregon.
Can, yes, it's possible, but it's a lot less likely. Now, if Oregon plays the way they played against Cal or the way they played against Stanford, they will lose this game, and it won't even be a 3-point game. It'll be Utah covering pretty thoroughly. So
yeah, it'll be interesting too to see like if Utah ends up losing this game close, it's just a bad spot for Oregon to be in if they have to play them twice.
Oh yeah. Well, here's the thing. The playoff is gone if you lose to them now. So it doesn't matter. I don't know that this result matters in terms of anything else for the Pac-12 championship game, because the circumstances would be completely different if Oregon comes into the Pac-12 championship game and it's just a trip to the Rose Bowl on the line. I think that's a different game.
Can I give you...
With the playoff hanging in the balance, there's a lot more pressure on Oregon.
The Ari Wasserman thesis on rematches. I think if you lose the first time and then you face that same team and beat them in the championship game later, that the first game should not count anymore.
2017 Georgia agrees with you because they got clobbered by Auburn and then beat the snot out of them in the SEC championship.
I think you could have made the case for Oklahoma to make the playoff last year when they beat Iowa State after losing to them in the regular season when it mattered. Like, to me, they were a two-loss team that got eliminated. But in my viewpoint, I think there was a solid case for Oklahoma to be viewed as a one-loss team because avenging the loss, I think, matters. We use wins and losses as a way to, you know, kind of figure out what we can draw about that team. And, you know, like for instance, any loss earlier on in the year is a clue in terms of how good that team actually is later on. So if you use that first loss as a clue to insinuate or to draw a conclusion that the team that lost is flawed, and then that team turns around a month later or a week later or 2 weeks later on a bigger stage with more pressure and beats that team that beat you first, to me, if I'm a committee member, I kind of, it's a wash.
If it's Oregon, though, and they take that second loss, I don't think it
matters. Yeah, no, I don't think it's going to happen. I'm just saying, like, and I think it's a much more compelling argument if you lose in September and October, and then you beat them later on.
You're a different team.
I think twice in 2 weeks.
Which is going to be the Notre Dame argument if Cincinnati loses. So,
against you on this, by the way, when it comes to the Cincinnati-Notre Dame thing. If Cincinnati loses, Cincinnati is not going to the playoff under any circumstance. I think Notre Dame is already basically...
The question is whether Notre Dame would be.
I think Notre Dame is basically kind of out. I don't think there's really much anything they could do. But if they needed to find a fourth team in a scenario where it's between Notre Dame and Cincinnati lost to SMU, Notre Dame would get the nod, in my opinion. And that hypothetical planet. I think I'm very certain that's the way it would work out.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get to that point. So I
kind of want to.
But that I know. And I think you may be right and I may be wrong in that situation. But I'm going to stick to my guns of if you don't do that.
Yeah. And there's also a distinction between principle and reality. Like in principle, if you have a head-to-head matchup, and I've said this about Ohio State, Oregon. If Ohio State and Oregon are the last two teams in, I take Oregon, scrap all the protocol. I don't care if Ohio State beats a top 10 team 6 weeks in a row. Resume takes a backseat to head-to-head if there's only two teams being compared. I get that.
So,
but that's not the way it works.
Here's another game. Now, I want to ask you this, because I don't think there's a shocker possibility in this game, because I wouldn't be shocked if either team won. Iowa State is a 4-point underdog at Oklahoma. Would you be shocked in the least if Iowa State beat Oklahoma?
No.
I wouldn't either, especially after the way Iowa State lost last week. It feels like one of those boomerang games where they're a better team than they showed in that Texas Tech loss. Oklahoma's coming off the loss to Baylor. Oklahoma has Oklahoma State the following week. Nothing would surprise me in this game. Not a single thing.
Oklahoma might not be good. It's okay to like come to that realization.
Distinct possibility, Ari. Distinct possibility.
So like an Iowa State is probably the average version of what it's supposed to be this year. You know, maybe a little bit worse than expectations because it's hard to live up to those expectations. But I don't view Oklahoma as the juggernaut that its helmet suggests this year. And that's why I picked them to lose last week. And I would certainly not be shocked if they lost this week.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. Now, I think Iowa State, you know, the Matt Campbell thing's interesting to me because his record now, you know, we always talk about it, and the Iowa State fans get mad when we talk about him taking another job. His record now makes him a little bit tougher sell if you're one of those big schools. Now, here's how I feel about that. And I'm hopeful, you Iowa State fans who get mad at me every time I mention this, I hope he stays forever for your sakes. But I'm going to tell you right now, even if it's hard to sell, people who pay attention know that the fact that he's gotten Iowa State to this point where we're expecting them to win this much, like that tells you all you need to know about the job he's done there. Because that's a program that was, it wasn't a perennial doormat because Kansas is in the league, but you were like, okay, they're going to win 4 to 5 games a year and every once in a while they're going to win 7. This team is consistently good.
And even in the games they lose, they're consistently competitive, too. Yes. But it's also like a reminder, too, that if you're a person or a coach that's in Matt Campbell's spot, you know, it's very admirable to take the extension or to want to wait for the right job or to do everything that you can do to, you know, be loyal and also, you know, look out for the right perfect scenario. But it's also just like if you have a chance to strike when the iron is hot, and someone's going to back up a Brinks truck into your front yard, you know, it is kind of an interesting thing where it's just like you might as well go when you're wanted because you never know when a few – not that Matt Campbell isn't, but he's not as hot of a candidate right now as he was 12 months ago. So –
well, and isn't Lincoln Riley going to take $11 billion to go to LSU? That's the rumor this week, right? I don't think Lincoln Riley's going anywhere, by the way. I don't believe that for a second.
Yeah, I mean, I don't understand what would the reason be for that. I mean, you're at a place where people already love you and you're going into that conference. And it's like, I think you can make a case that LSU could maybe pay a little bit more and that LSU has a more natural recruiting footprint and a job where the last three have won a national championship.
The last three, yes.
So I understand that, but I don't know if there's a huge enough difference to make that jump. Like, you know, from great job to great job in the same conference.
Yeah, I don't either. And look, Oklahoma can pay Lincoln Riley. And at a certain point, you're just rich and you're not worried about the because there's some stupid money figures floating around. $11.5 million, which, I don't necessarily believe that. I'm not exactly sure where that started, but I have a suspicion where it started. And I don't necessarily think it's from Lincoln Riley's camp. I don't think that's where it is, where it's coming from. I think that's probably coming from Baton Rouge to get everybody excited, even though it's probably not happening. The Michigan State thing, the Detroit Free Press report that they're...
I was just going to say, are we going to talk about that or what?
Yeah, 10 years, $85 million for Mel Tucker. I know we already talked about the Michigan State game, but look, if LSU's open and you're worried he might go there, USC's open. I don't know that he's a candidate there, but maybe. Florida might open. That's another place. If LSU's interested in him, Florida probably would be too. I mean, think about all the different potential openings. So,
I read that report is that he's the highest.
To lock him down.
He's the high. He would be if that report is true. The highest paid African American coach in sports, not just college football, but in sports.
Yep. It also wouldn't that reset the market in the Big Ten?
I think it would.
Because Ryan Day has to get matched. I think at that point.
Well, let me ask you this. I know that we've talked a lot about Mel Tucker on this podcast, and my initial viewpoint of this being a slow build but an effective build is not the way it's worked out. He did a great job in the portal, and Colton Pouncey, our Michigan State writer, wrote a great story about how he attacked the portal and got guys mm-hmm. like I don't know, Kenneth Walker. But
yeah, Kavarius Crouch. Yeah,
like, 12 starters. He has not proven to be able to build a program long-term just yet. I'm not saying he's only been a
head coach for 3 years.
So what I'm saying is it possible that Mel Tucker just took the best alignment of transfer portal guys, built a team, and parlayed that one crazy successful offseason into $100 million?
It's entirely possible. It is entirely possible.
Think about that. Think about that.
Yeah, it's crazy when you think about it that way. Now, in college basketball, we've seen this where, you know, we've seen a coach have a great weekend in the NCAA tournament and then suddenly get a new job and parlay that into maybe $20 million contract, but not nearly $100 million. It is crazy when you
think about
it. When I
read that last night, I was like, I understand that Michigan State is a place where you have to have a coach who gets it. You have to have somebody who understands the strategy, who has the relationships in the Midwest, who can recruit Ohio. All the things that Mel Tucker possesses on his resume is exactly what Michigan State's coach needs to have. And I don't know how easy or hard it is to find that. I was floored when I saw that report.
I was too, and I'm not entirely sure where that's coming from either. That's not a piece of gossip that I heard a lot this week. The piece of gossip that was floating around and I ended up having to write about it was somebody kept saying Mac Brown was going to retire. And multiple people kept telling multiple reporters that. So I finally just called North Carolina. I'm like, is Mac Brown retiring? And they put Mac Brown on the phone and he's like, I'm not retiring. I don't know where this is. He thinks it's coming from an agent. He did not name the particular agent publicly, but he thinks it is coming from an agent. And
can we just shout out Jeremy Sharp at UNC for getting it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he understands that. The sports information director at UNC. And look, I called and said, look, this is going around. And I don't know if it's going to hit the public because I'm asking you, is there anything to this? And they were very unequivocal that there was nothing to it. Because a lot of times you'll hear a rumor and you'll call and the person will be like, I don't know, or they won't say anything committal,
or not take
your
call.
Know something's up.
And I don't know if this happened before or after. When did that story about Mac? I read it, but when did it run again? These days are kind of blending together.
It ran on Wednesday, so I talked to him on Tuesday, and he said absolutely not, no, nothing's going on. And my idea was I wasn't going to write anything about it if it didn't reach the public sphere, but that was one of those that multiple of our reporters had heard it. I'm sure other reporters had heard the same thing. And our reporters had heard it from various people. And so I had a denial from Mac Brown, but my thing was, I'm not going to put it out there and give a rumor oxygen.
That doesn't deserve it. Yep.
Right. But then somebody else reported it. And it's like, okay, well, it's out there now. So I'm going to ask again. And so I, you know, spoke to Mac and he said, absolutely not. I am not retiring. And then said where he thought it came from and we put the story out. But that's how things go this time of year. There's a lot of kind of,
well, North Carolina landed a top 100 talking player out of Virginia on Wednesday.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And like, that was the other coincidental
piece of timing. Yes.
And I know that part of the element of that story was Mac probably felt like people were trying to get into the train tracks and derail the recruiting success that they were having, you know, because they've been doing such a great job in not just for North Carolina, but all of a sudden two top 100 players, one 5-star prospect out of the state of Virginia, you know, and North Carolina has certain, and I actually, you know, have told people at North Carolina that they broke my heart because this year was supposed to be my Stars Matter. North Carolina did it out. You know, it was going to be my victory lap. And
I would argue that they don't have the stars all playing yet. That's probably next year. Now, Sam Howell won't be there. But, you know, the fruits of that, because Max First Class, those guys are going to be juniors next year. Or, well, the Max First Full Cycle Class, those guys are going to be juniors. They obviously flip Sam Howell immediately.
Yeah, and they have another quarterback who's Drake May, who was a top 100 player who was committed to Bama, who's on the roster right now. So,
Luke May's little brother, former North Carolina basketball player.
I still believe in North Carolina, But they're recruiting at a very, very high level for the ACC. And top 10 class right now, top 15 class last year. Like the payoff for that is going to happen eventually. So if not this year, obviously not. Next year, I will be back on the North Carolina bandwagon.
We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
We left off in the Big 12, and I think here's my potential shocker in the Big 12, and I don't have any solid evidence as to why this could happen, but this is the game I feel like it can happen. This is the one where it feels like something weird can happen. Lubbock at night, Oklahoma State, 10.5-point favorite. Oklahoma State has gotten better and better and better and has looked positively dominant the last 2 weeks. I mean, they destroyed West Virginia, destroyed TCU. They look like they have hit their absolute stride. So now you go to Lubbock, a place where strange things happen. Let's not forget what happened to Texas in 2008. Now, obviously, that was a Texas Tech team that went 11-1 in the regular season. But Texas Tech just beat Iowa State, which is the team that beat Oklahoma State. Texas Tech beat them on a 62-yard field goal. Texas Tech has played differently since the firing of Matt Wells. I feel like they've played a little bit better. Although they weren't playing badly when he was still there. This is the weirdest season, Ari. Texas Tech has fired its coach, hired its new coach. Meanwhile, its interim coach, Sonny Cumbie, is doing a hell of a job.
I'm not laying two scores on the road in that scenario.
No, of course you aren't.
I think that Oklahoma State's going to win, but I'm not putting my money there. But here's the thing, Andy. I think
listen,
that this
the way
is probably,
Oklahoma State's been playing, that's a playoff team.
This is the spot that a non-lunatic would pick for the spot where things would get a little murky.
I'm the non-lunatic.
I'm gonna be,
you're the
you're
lunatic?
Not the lunatic. I'm going to be the smartest man in the history of college football prognostication.
Hit it.
Or I'm
say
going
it,
to be
it,
the
say
dumbest.
Say it.
Arkansas.
Say it. No.
Arkansas.
Say it all out loud. Arkansas is
going
to do
I
what?
I believe Arkansas has a very good chance. I'm not going to say going to, because that's just that's clickbait. That's bait. But I think that Arkansas has a chance to play Alabama close and for things to be weird. I kind of alluded to it after the playoff, but they're three winner of three games, sneaky talented. Alabama, like you corrected me on the other show, is not in Death Star mode. We talked about how much we thought Arkansas was a well-coached team and a sneaky, talented team earlier on in the year. They had a three-game skid in the middle of the year where things went a little bit off the rails. But if Alabama is looking ahead to a really tough finish, or already starting to think about what it's going to be like to play Georgia in Atlanta or Auburn in the Iron Bowl, this team is good enough and well-coached enough to pop you if you're not expecting it.
And also, lest we forget, Barry Odom's defense probably played the best game of anybody against that Alabama offense last year that was practically unstoppable. This offense is not that offense.
And you have to be convinced, too. It's like, what do you think? Do you think Alabama is what the committee thinks, or do you think they're somewhere in the 2, 3, 4, 5, or the 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 range with the rest of them?
I think they're with the rest of them this year.
Me too.
Now, they can prove me wrong because there's one game this year that has made that keeps giving me pause. Every time I think about it, I'm like, oh wait, maybe I'm underestimating where Alabama's actually at. Because every time I go back to the Ole Miss game, I'm like, wait a second. That team did that to Ole Miss. And I think if it has that in it, it could beat anybody in the country, including Georgia.
Yeah, well,
but
the cool thing about...
I don't recall seeing that team any other game this year.
And Alabama, it's funny because the knock on them is they're number two because they are Alabama and they're in benefit of the doubt mode. They don't have any quality wins, and it's like, Lane Kiffin is doing his old team a nice little favor right now.
That Ole Miss win is a really quality win. That's a great win.
Especially
Ole Miss is good. Ole Miss is 7-2. And I'm sorry, 8. Well, they're 8-2 now. No, 7-2. 7-2. But they're gonna win. They're gonna beat Vandy this weekend. So they'll be 8-2. Egg Bowl, you and I have said is the most exciting game of the year. So we can't wait for that. But that win by Alabama is going to be one of the best wins of the year when we look back.
Yeah, I mean, Mississippi might be in the top 10 on Tuesday.
Yeah, and Alabama crushed them. But, like I said, that's the only time. And now, as Florida goes off the rails, I think back to that game, and I'm like, they only beat that team by 2. Now, granted, Florida was a different team back then. But that also gives me some trepidation about Alabama. I think Alabama's going to win this game against Arkansas. I'm just not sure Alabama's going to cover.
Yeah, I think I would take the points, and I would not be falling out of my seat shocked if this was a close game in the fourth quarter.
Our producer Cam notes 8-2. Again, this is us doing math in real time. Yes, 12 minus 2 games remaining is 10, so Oklahoma's played 10 games. They are 8-2, so they will go 9-2.
We're not supposed to know people's records off the top of our head. Come on. There's only so much information a human being can... I don't know what anyone's record is.
We
know how many losses
teams have. But the problem, it was basic arithmetic for me, Ari, because I was just going, oh, with it, they've lost two. They've got this many games left. So once again, we've screwed that up. But I do think this is going to be a potentially very fun game. I don't think it's going to be the shocker. You think it might be the shocker. So I think Oklahoma State, Texas Tech could be the shocker. You think Arkansas, Alabama could be the shocker.
Alabama just doesn't lose games like this. So, you know, maybe I'm just...
Except for the one they did earlier this year.
Yeah, but Texas A&M, I think, is a little bit... Oh, I guess they...
You mean the Texas A&M team
lost to Arkansas? I know.
Okay.
I know.
And I'm not transitive of propertying this. I'm just saying.
No, I know what you're saying. Yeah, you're right. You're right.
I just don't think this Alabama team is what we've grown accustomed to. And so that makes it all very interesting.
Yep.
Now, you mentioned at the top of the show the give up factor, the pack it in factor. And there's a couple games that look really funky when you look at the lines. And I'll start with Florida on the road at Missouri is an 8.5-point favorite.
You got to be some sort of psychopath to lay 2 scores on the road in the SEC right now on Florida.
Having seen Florida play, Florida just gave up 52 points to Samford.
I'm not saying Florida can't beat Missouri by 10. They gave up
40 to South Carolina.
I'm not saying it won't happen. I'm just saying you got to be a psychopath to expect it to happen and to put your money on it.
I don't understand this line at all, Ari.
Well, Mizzou
sucks. It's like they have not watched either of these teams the last 3 weeks.
The fact that it's on the road, too. It's like, all right, so you're going to start laying. It's like, because if Florida has given up on Dan Mullen, they can lose this game.
Right. Easily. So let's go through the last few games. Now, it's Vanderbilt, Georgia, and South Carolina. But Missouri actually averaged 3.5 yards a carry against Georgia. That's not terrible. But they averaged 6.5 yards a carry against Vandy and 5.6 yards a carry against South Carolina. You've seen Florida play. Like, you saw Florida against LSU. You saw Florida against South Carolina. You saw Florida against Samford. What makes anybody think they're going to stop Missouri?
That's right. No, I know. And the Florida LSU game, they got absolutely demolished up front.
They did. And LSU hasn't been able to block anybody like that the rest of the year.
Yep. So I'm taking the points here if I'm betting it, but this game is a sicko game.
Now maybe it's an over game. The total 69.5, because Missouri, the defense has not been great. So Florida's offense
far
has not
too
stopped
ready
scoring.
To hit overs that are at 70 and above.
I'm not saying take the over in this one.
Okay.
Because here's the thing: the give up factor that you mentioned. Florida's offense, I'm not sure it was a case of they just hadn't given up or Samford was just that easy to score on. You know, they did only score 10 against South Carolina, so that does give me pause. But with Florida, there's also still offensively the possibility of things aren't working. They throw Anthony Richardson in there and all of a sudden they're scoring at will.
Yeah, we're still doing this quarterback thing. November 18th is when we're recording it.
Well, they're not doing it.
No, I know, but we're still like talking
on the Emory Jones train, so.
Yeah. Yeah,
so the other game.
It's just okay. Yeah, let's go to the other game.
Yeah, let's go to the other game. Texas is a 3-point underdog at West Virginia. Now, as we've discussed this, Vegas has figured out that Texas is not good, but only a 3-point underdog. They just lost to Kansas. Sorry.
Have they given up? Is losing to Kansas giving up?
Well, whoever leaked the Bo Davis audio after the Iowa State game has given up for sure. I mean, they probably gave up before they even got there. Because anybody who leaked that Bo Davis audio and thought, well, I'll get him, I'll show him, this will get him fired, all it did was say, wait, somebody on this team is soft if they think this is going to get Bo Davis in trouble.
The monkey thing, too. That question that reporter did we talk about that yet?
We've mentioned it obliquely,
not the monkey. The question that weird question that Sark got asked on Monday.
Oh yes! Oh my gosh! I that question. So I feel like I should transcribe the question. It did sound like, if you watch Succession, it sounded like Cousin Greg from Succession asking a question at a press conference. Basically.
Yeah. We don't have to go too deep into that. But I will say that I've
No. We need to, now that you've brought it up.
I mean, listen, there are some reporters who think that the best way of covering a team is to be the best friends and the biggest cheerleaders for the team. And to me, that was like the most awkward attempt at trying to make the coach like you I've ever heard, ever.
And all right, let's see if we can hear it. I'm gonna try this. Sorry, let's see if we got it.
Good morning to you, Coach Sarkisian.
Good morning,
Coach. A couple years ago, one of my good friends and I were faced with a massive problem we couldn't solve. And in his wisdom, he said, "You know, at this point, we need to stop and ask ourselves, what would an extraordinary person do in this situation?" And this resonated with me the whole weekend. And I realized that of all the coaches who could be standing at that podium right now in those shoes, you are that extraordinary person. And you have a team of what I call coaching juggernauts. This is not only my opinion, this is a fact. I don't think anyone could dispute this.
He calls them coaching.
So my question, as we write, you know, the Sarkisian era story, we're not even done with the first chapter yet, can you unfold some of the onion of what are you working on? How are you solving this problem? I realize that you might not even know, but, you know, I want to steal from Julian Edelman. It's going to be one hell of a story.
You want to
How poor Julian Edelman catches a stray at the end of that one, by the way. He's like, what am I? Leave me out of this.
Do you ever, that could be a bet for future on this show. Loser has to unfold an onion.
I'll unfold it. I won't eat it because I'll puke if I try to eat it. But I'll certainly unfold one. I believe you peel the layers of the onion. I don't believe you unfold the onion. But I want to know.
Here's my takeaway.
I want to know what was the problem that this student and his friend couldn't solve?
What problem could you and your friend have that you couldn't solve? I think that we should do a random ranking of like scenarios of where that could fit.
Yes.
Losing too much money to a bookie.
Mm-hmm.
Getting rid of a dead body.
I think at least television and movies have taught me there are multiple solutions to the second problem. To the owing too much money to the bookie if you don't have any money is a somewhat unsolvable problem.
An unsolvable problem. Your wife wants to leave you and there's nothing you can do to get her back?
Absolutely unsolvable.
I'm trying to think. What else could be an unsolvable problem?
How to fix Texas football?
I think if the reporter who asked that question heard you say that, he would cry.
I think he would too.
I don't think that anybody took that loss harder than...
What you call a team of coaching juggernauts? They're either the team of coaching juggernauts or they're not.
Are they coaching juggernauts?
I don't think they are. They lost to Kansas, so they can't be.
Do you think that if you are the head coach at Texas, you have one of the 15 best coaching jobs in all of football across the world?
According to all of the people we interviewed
the NFL.
For that best job story, I don't anymore because the NFL jobs are better because you don't have to talk to 16-year-olds all the time.
Yeah.
Some of the NFL jobs. Now, look, there's the Jags job.
He's an extraordinary person for being in the job.
I love that the guy asking the question.
You can't debate it.
He and his buddy are admitting they are not extraordinary people.
Yeah.
Because they're saying, what would an extraordinary person do if faced with these circumstances? Because we certainly are not.
Well, he also said in the question, too, that they have a team of coaching juggernauts, and that's a fact that can't be debated, and now we're going to debate that.
I don't know. It can't be debated, but it's not a fact, if that makes sense. They are most definitely not. The loss to Kansas proves that point.
Is Coach Sark a coaching juggernaut? That should be the title of the episode.
He is when he's got Mac Jones and Devontae Smith.
I just don't think anybody can debate that.
I'm still on the unsolvable problem.
You thought that I was pro Texas? You thought that I had a Texas problem?
Oh. I just don't get it. And listen, kudos to Steve Sarkisian for answering that question and not blowing up at the guy, because I think most of us could not handle getting their butts kissed publicly for that long. Everybody likes to be complimented. Nobody likes to be complimented for a long time or publicly. Like, that is uncomfortable.
Well, it wasn't just a compliment. It was uncomfortably hyperbolic.
Oh yeah.
It's like, it's not like just like you're a good coach. It's like, and then
you're a superhero.
You're
Steve.
A superhero who saved lives and donates money to the poor and feeds the hungry and solves world peace problems. Just like,
and you know, Sark's like, dude, I was like 500 in Washington. I don't know what we're talking about here.
I honestly just lost to Kansas. Please cut me some slack.
Please leave it. Please stop talking. Wow.
I honestly don't even know. I bet you coaches just black out up there and don't even, you know, half the time they just, you know, wait till the last portion of the question and try their best to answer. I don't even, like, if I were up there and somebody asked, I wouldn't even know what to say.
Well, what's interesting is, I find this as someone who's heard a lot of really dumb questions at press conferences. Usually when they ramble like that or engage in what our own Sam Kahn Jr. calls question foreplay. And that was some serious heavy question petting right there. But usually there's no point at the end of the question. The person just wanted to hear themselves talk and they squirted it out and made a statement. This guy, and this is what amazes me about this particular question. He had all the question foreplay, basically every sort of variety of question foreplay you could have.
Took a hard left with Julian Edelman.
Yes, but he actually got to the question. The gist of the question, and this is how a normal human being would have asked it, is, Steve, how do you solve your losing to Kansas problem? That's a legitimate question.
No, his question was, how do you fix the program?
That's even better. It's even more legitimate.
And it's like, I don't even know how a person can answer that question. Andy, how could you solve world hunger?
Yeah, how can you bring peace to the Middle East?
Yeah.
How can you fix Texas football? All of these questions are the same difficulty level. All of them.
Oh boy. Yeah, and by the way, I'm laying the points. Texas ain't doing anything. I'm fading Texas every week, and it's been awesome. My life is better. I'm happier. I taste again. I see colors more vividly.
The burnt orange is more burnt.
Yeah. Yes.
Ari, you're an extraordinary person.
Thanks, buddy.
You are a podcasting juggernaut, or you are what I call a podcasting juggernaut.
Can that be debated?
It cannot. It most certainly cannot. We will talk to you after the games.